is Mr. Gary Cross, who is the crops agent for the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service of Person and Granville Counties. Good morning, Gary. How you doing? Let's see here. Good morning, Gary. We'll try it again, and it works better when I press all the proper buttons. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good, thank you. Long time since you've been on the program with us. Glad to have you back with us.
Been out in the field.
A lot going on, and you know, it's hot, but it's July, and you know, here's August coming along, and it's going to be hot as well, but we've been getting, you know, a few showers here and there. I don't know if some of the showers have came too late, but anyway, we're glad to get them whenever we can, and just want to say a special thanks to our sponsors of the program, T.G. Brooks Company, South Boston Memorials, and Our Pride Foods, makers of Our Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip. I spoke with Gary a little bit yesterday, and we were just kind of talking about a few things we would talk about on the program today. You know, Gary, some good-looking, you know, tobacco in the fields, good-looking corn, soybeans, and then sometimes you'll see some that's not doing the best. I guess it just depends on, you know, what stage it was at when it really needed water and if it got water at that time or not.
That is correct. We had a early, what I would call, drought when we planted especially corn and soybeans and tobacco, where we had between 4 and 6 weeks without any rain at all. And that was tough to get through. It affected emergence. It affected, you know, tobacco. It probably helped root development a little better because too much rain keeps the roots at the top. Not enough makes them go deeper to seek moisture. So, you know, you got a little bit of a positive issue out of that, but not much. But it's, you know, it didn't stunt the growth in tobacco. But what we're dealing with now in tobacco is we're starting to see the black shank. We're starting to see maybe a little Granville wilt, but we're really seeing his target spot, which is on the leaf that, you know, you have to use a fungicide to treat it, and some of the fungicides are just not working because this humidity is really taking a toll on the plant, and, you know, many fungicides that you use on any product, any crop, sometimes don't have what you call systemic or long-term viability to kill the disease. You know, you spray them on, they're off in, you know, 2 or 3 days, so or maybe a little longer, but not much. But if you got continual disease coming out, you got to do multiple sprays. You start with fungicides, you start building resistant issues, and they're just not a lot of alternatives, especially in tobacco, when it's out in the field and, you know, at the height that it is now, you know, four feet tall or a little bit taller than that. You just don't have many options, maybe a couple options and, you know, two different types of fungicides. And, you know, if you're spraying continuously for that, there's resistance to it kind of builds up, and then your effectiveness and efficacy is not very good. So, and that happens with all crops. If you're spraying tomatoes, if you're spraying corn for fusarium, or soybeans for, you know, frog eye leaf, whatever, frog eye leaf spot, fungicides can wear down pretty quick. Just like, you know, you get resistant weeds, your effectiveness during the year on spraying fungicides can go down if you use them multiple times. So just, you know, just some of the issues that we're having to deal with. And it ain't just Person and Granville County that's having target spot problems. It is statewide, according to the state specialist. And before I forget it, on tobacco, we're having the annual tobacco tour here at Oxford starting at 9 to 12. Here at the Oxford Research Station, Outer Loop Road, here most farmers know where it's at. If they're interested, call the Granville County Extension Office, and we can reserve you a spot. So we're talking about nematicides. We're talking about a lot of good things this year, probably not as much about fertility as we are about how to do different treatments for fungicides and other things in the water we put on when we transplant, the transplant water. So a lot of different things that they're going to be talking about out here, and we will be talking about target spots. So if you are interested in coming to that, it's next Wednesday, let us know, and at least by today or Monday, and we can get you in. Another thing before I forget it, Rob, and you may have been announcing this, is the five-county beef tour is also going on next Saturday, and you need to call the Warren County Extension Office. It'll start at Warrington at the Extension Office in the morning, so to get more details, you need to call over there. So, yeah, tobacco, a few things going on. You know, we need a good tobacco year. You know, that leaf is everything, and the quality of that leaf is everything. So you do everything you can to keep the target spot down if you can.
Well, so you say that next Wednesday is when you all are going to be doing the tobacco tour.
At the Tobacco Research Station.
And if you want to participate, you can call either the person or Granville County Extension offices and let them know that you will be in attendance, and that will be from 9 to 12. And you say that the five-county beef tour will be on, what, Saturday the 24th?
Yes.
Okay, and that will start out at the Warren County Extension office.
They need to contact them to get registered.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about the tobacco tour. What all does that consist of doing a tobacco tour?
Well, they have research plots. Matt Vann, who's our state specialist, has research plots up here at the research station. Some of them are graduate student plots working on their master's and Ph.D., and he's looking at different types of issues that'll help benefit the farmer, maybe a transplant, and looking at you know, the MH issues related to topping and other different types of issues, plant growth regulators, and in that capacity, and he's looking at different types of nematicides, because I'm doing a project, not there, but out in the field this year on nematodes with Matt. And there's going to be, you know, half a dozen of us in the northern end of the state doing it to find out what type, because we believe that some of the nematodes are causing a lot of the problems that are out here, including a lot worse issues we're seeing on black shank. We're seeing black shank really bad. The last 5 years we've seen it really bad, and we think the nematode population may be increasing, and that's creating some of the problems in relation to, but we're going to find out. We're going to test some grounds that have black shank and some that don't, and look and see what we have. So that's something that's, you know, an August project coming up. But I think everybody will enjoy. This is something new. A lot of times we talk about fertility and pretty in-depth on fertility and tobacco, and I think he's switching this year to see a little different issue in some of the problems we're having out here in the tobacco world in relation to the planting and harvesting and the growing of the tobacco.
Well, I know that some folks have started to harvest, and I've noticed some tobacco is just as green can be. Some really nice looking tobacco, but I was thinking about it, you know, Gary, harvesting months, you know, latter part of July, August, September, and then you get into October, And, you know, frost in October can sometimes come around, say, middle part of October. So,
and that has to do with managing planting date and managing nitrogen rates on the plant. Most farmers have got that down pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Identifying how much they need to put down and what works from their own history. This year, I think tobacco is a little bit behind as far as growth and as far as, you know, where it is maturity. You know, a lot of times we're harvesting a lot earlier than this on those bottom leaves, and that may be because we're just burning up, too. But, you know, it's they need to be out there if they can start getting them. Tobacco's green, but we've had good moisture here the last, you know, we had 5.5 inches of rain off of the hurricane and overall, and, you know, some got 3. It rained that Sunday after that Saturday in some areas. It got an extra 1.5 inches, so, you know, it totaled out to be almost 5 inches. So, you know, there's plenty of water out here. It's just, we need some growth and we need to get some control of disease. But, you know, that'll take a cool spell. But what happens, it'll rain maybe this weekend. And if it's if we have a little cool spell, that'll help that target spot. But if it just turns off humid, it'll turn out and it'll set it on fire. So that's some of the issues you're dealing with out here this year.
Well, now, Gary, the target spot, I guess more or less, is just a fungus on the leaf. That will pretty much
creates holes in the leaves, and that creates you know, a quality issue. And you know, if you've got several of them on a leaf, you got several, you know, holes in that leaf, and that's just a quality issue. And you especially don't want them on that top 6 to 8, or let me get back up on that, maybe the top 12 to 14 leaves, because that's your money maker, and you know, you want to keep that as clean as you can get it.
I tell you, you know, with all the little setbacks that can occur and things like that, you know, whether you're gardening or you are a, you know, farmer, you know, you have to have little things and plans set in place. And many times, things work out a little bit easier than others. I guess it just makes life a little bit more interesting, to say the least. Now, Gary, have you got a lot of field plots going on right now with whether it's, you know, maybe
I do. I've got of course I've always got my infamous popcorn plot.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hoping to have a tour with it in September. I've got a insect-resistant plot down on the Butner Umstead Research Farm, which is in Butner, and we're having a agent's training down there on August 3rd. I've got something new that I have done, which it's something that I kind of wanted to do for a while. I was talking to folks out of USDA. Ames, Iowa, and they had a project of looking at the corns of all the native tribes in the United States. So I've got a plot 0.5 mile south of Roxboro of all the native tribes of the United States on corn, all the different types of corn they raised in their past history of about, I don't know, 50, 60 tribes across the United States, maybe more. And I'm going to do a field tour on that, I hope, in late August or early September. So look out for those issues. And that plot south of Roxboro just looks outstanding. I mean, you know, you have very early maturing varieties, which the northern tribes would have had. You have later maturing that the southern and southwest tribes would have had. I will guarantee you the corn people of the Native American community were the Hopis. Out of Arizona and New Mexico. I mean, they had more corn variety than anybody. So what a lot of people don't understand is a lot of the corn came from out of Central America, from the Native Americans in Central America to the Native Americans in Southwest, and it would make its way up through the Midwest or out here, and a lot of trading went on to get that. And some of it here, a lot of it here was probably came from what came out of the Southwest. So, you know, someone may correct me historically on that, but that's where a lot of the corn, because corn is only indigenous, or it's only came from Central America, and it all spread out from there to South America and to North America. It is not on the, it wasn't indigenous on the African continent or the Asian continent, only Central America. So, you know, that's where it all started. And there's a lot of history behind a lot of this. It'd be something if kids wanted to come out and see it, if, you know, schools, people who are interested in history, people who are interested in looking at different types of corn varieties, maybe for something to sell down the road is something unique. So, you know, I think this is the only plot out there in North America, except for maybe one in Ames, Iowa, that they may be growing for increase of their own at the USDA Research Center there. So something a little unique and a little different. And we'll be talking later on about maybe a tour out there and having some speakers and working from there.
Well, now, you made mention about your popcorn. How many different varieties do you have planted this year?
Of the popcorn?
Yes.
Probably 100 and between 100 and 150. I don't know.
That many different varieties?
That many different varieties, you bet. Some of them are, how do I want to say, I've got some checks in there that are field corn checks, but the others are Flint-type corns that pop, you know, like a Chipotle. Let's talk. Chipotle is a Flint type corn, but it'll pop if you throw it in a frying pan. It'll pop just like popcorn. Stuff you Flint type corn is what you make flour out of, tortillas, things of that nature, corn tortillas, I should say. But it also pop just like popcorn.
Wow. Now, have you come across a variety of popcorn that you like the best as far as your as the taste?
I think they all have their uniqueness. I mean, you know, you have the small Tom Thumb type novelty popcorns, which are very small hollows, so it doesn't affect your digestive tract as bad if people have digestive issues. But it's all healthy. It's all good for you. It's high in fiber. In fact, it may be one of the highest fiber foods that you can eat. It's got vitamins, niacin, other good components. It does have carbohydrates, so if you eat way too much of it, you know, you might want to be careful, but especially if you're diabetic or something of that nature. But in relation to the fiber, pretty much outdoes a lot of the issues in it. So that's a very positive part of popcorn. It's one of the healthiest foods you can eat. And I'm gonna put it in the top five. I may get some argument over that, but you know, broccoli I like, and it's probably in that top five. But popcorn is a all around healthy food and snack, and you and I both like to eat it.
Oh, absolutely! So you can, you know, pop some at home, and I've always said that, you know, the smell of popcorn popping is what makes you want some of it. And, you know, then you've got flavored popcorn. Some people like butter on it. Some like the white cheddar popcorn.
Caramel.
So, yeah, I mean,
all different types. There's people's been very creative on starting popcorn businesses that have all different types of coatings. And you have one right there in Roxboro that's done that.
I was getting ready to say,
and
they have just a huge variety of different flavors of the popcorn. And well, now, Gary, now with all the different varieties of popcorn that you have planted, do you not worry about cross-pollination, or does that not matter?
You're going to get some of that. I with that, but, you know, I have to look at them. You know, you need probably 50 to 80 feet between them, but, you know, nobody has that much space, so you plant one or two varieties maybe, or three, and go from there, because you're going to get cross-pollination. But if you don't mind a little red in with your white, or your white in with your red, or your, you know, if you get a little purple in there, or blue or whatever, it ain't going to hurt you. Just throw it in the pan, put some oil on it, heat it up, pop it, and go. Many different colors of popcorn. Red, white, black, yellow, orange. I've even seen some green types. Purple, blue, brown. I mean, just almost the colors of the rainbow.
Wow.
Much. So there's that many different types of colors. There's that many different types of popcorns. There's different types from heirlooms to which are older type, like strawberry and Pennsylvania Dutch butter, to novelties like Ladyfinger and Tom Thumb and Spectrum and those types, to the Flint types, like I was telling you, like Chipotle and Brazil 27-23, and there's all different types. And, you know, here in the latter part, if things look okay, I'll have to spray one of the plots, but we can have a little field tour, and people can come out and look at it and see for yourself.
Well, you know, I guess one thing around here, if you wanted to raise your own popcorn for your own consumption, or maybe...
I've identified about 80 varieties that can be grown in North Carolina
decently. And if you done that, that would make a nice Christmas gift to give someone. Yeah. And I've always said, anytime you can give something that to a person that they can eat and enjoy, that's a wonderful gift. Now, Gary, as far as it goes with field corn, it is used for many different things.
Correct.
But now,
everything from fuel to cornmeal to
animal feeds and
lots of different issues.
Yeah. Now, do you have any idea of I'm going to call it dimple corn, field corn, that, you know, actually goes for human consumption for making, whether it's corn syrup and or, you know, like corn meal and things like that. Any idea of the number of, or the percentage of total acres that actually a field corn that goes to human consumption?
I don't know off the top of my head. Majority of the corn that's raised, believe it or not, goes to livestock. But another large chunk of it goes to, of course, human consumption. Probably it's a pretty close tie between livestock and human consumption, because we use a lot of corn to feed livestock, and then we eat the livestock, you know, and beef and pork and chickens and turkeys and everything else. You know, the field corn, there's different types of field corn too. There's high lysine for, that are oil type corns that are for specialty type issues. You know, that's for livestock. There's white corns for different types of meals, and corn flour type products, which is raised primarily in the Midwest. There's hard dent endosperm corn, and if you've ever heard of Frito-Lay chips, that's what they use to make those types of issues, because they can heat it. It doesn't burn like regular field corn when they mix their ingredients that have to be heated. So there's all different types of, you know, there's high protein types. There's a lot of different types of specialty corns out there that have multiple uses. You know, this country's done a tremendous amount of research in all areas in corn. That's probably one of the best research crops in the history of man. That in wheat, in my opinion, without any questions asked. I mean, look at it. You know, I was talking about the native corn tribe, native tribe corn plot out south of Roxboro. You had a group of people, of Americans, that took something called a Tessianite plant and turned it into a open pollinated corn variety. It may have took 1,000 years to done it, or 500, or whatever. That's pretty smart thinking. It was all done by selection with no scientific equipment or training, just looking at the ears, said, that's a good one, that's not. That one's got a lot of corn on it, that doesn't. That's a little bigger ear, that's a small ear, but that doesn't mean anything today. I mean, a larger ear back then might have, but today it may be a large ear, but it may not be filled out all the way. But that's how they did their selection. I mean, in some tribes the men did it, and other tribes the women did it. So it's extraordinarily, to me, you know, we have a lot of technology, and we're doing a lot of biotech and a lot of different things with all of our agriculture products. I just wanted to step back a minute and look at some of the scientific achievements that some of those Native American tribes did. And, you know, that's quite a scientific achievement to bring that about to an open pollinated variety. It's like how they discovered popcorn. The only way they could have discovered popcorn was to have it over a open fire in a pot, and it started popping on them. So, you know, that's how they discovered it. There's no other way it could have been done. So
yeah, so many things that was kind of discovered by mistake, so to speak.
You betcha. So, but, you know, I'm thinking, you know, back at minimum 800,000 years or maybe longer, that, you know, these tribes had sets of people within them that made the did all the planting, the harvesting, the taking care of it, and also did the selection for what they would need for seed for next year and what would be consumed. So that's quite an accomplishment. I don't believe people realize how in that time how technologically advanced that was. So they were making some pretty good decisions in relation to doing that. And I'm not going to say one tribe was better than the other, but some of them seemed to have more, you know, it may have been a survival issue that they would have more varieties, or they would have more emphasis on that because, you know, they didn't have water, because Southwest doesn't have a lot of water. Or they can go longer maturity or plant different types of maturities. I mean, this is the reason why we have a corn crop today is because of what the Native Americans did thousands of years ago. That's just no ifs, ands, or buts.
Well,
so, and I just wanted to look and see at some of the work they had done in the last 100 years on some of the varieties, and I have a very nice looking plot just south of Roxboro.
We'll
have some people come look at it if they desire.
So if you're interested, just contact Gary by calling either the person or the Granville County Extension office, and he will, you know, call you back. He's real good about returning calls. Now, Gary, we talked about popcorn. We talked a little bit about field corn. Now, sweet corn, you know, it's amazing. You know, all the different varieties of sweet corn, you know, that is available to plant. And it seems like they keep coming out with different varieties. Now, when it's sweet corn, do you prefer white or yellow?
I prefer the ones that are mixed.
Ambrosia, uh-huh.
A big Silver Queen fan, because I think we have better varieties of that. I like the yellow. There's some really good super sweet types, and Johnny can talk to you about these too, that are have biotech, and you can spray them for worms, and some of them may have some Roundup resistance, and not have any, you know, back issue. You can have a clean plot and have very good high quality sweet corn. The two primary in my opinion, primary groups in sweet corn are Illinois Foundation Seeds, which is in Tolano, Illinois, and Syngenta, of course, is the leader in the biotech sweet corn field. And biotech, you know, if you're raising, you know, I've been involved in raising sweet corn on large scale, and it is tough on weed control and insect control, and you get these newer BT-type sweet corns and or have a little resistance maybe to Roundup. You can spray them. You don't have near the problems that you have with weed control and other issues. So, you know, I've been in sweet corn fields 25, 30 years ago that, you know, they had to spray for earworm because you got to have a very nice presentation. You can't, you know, you and I, your dad and me and you and I would go out to the garden. Well, if it half the sweet corn ear had some earworm in it, you just chopped it off, and threw it in the pot, washed it, threw it in the pot, and ate it, and didn't think anything about it. Cut all that out of there and didn't worry about it. But, well, a lot of people don't, you know, aren't like us in relation to, you know, sweet corn. They want a perfect ear. And, you know, they, the industry who grows the sweet corn try and provide that, where there's no earworm damage. Earworm's the number one commodity negative, probably in sweet corn of anything. So, that's just, you know, that's just it. I mean, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago we did a sweet corn test here, and without a doubt, the varieties that come out of Syngenta were the top ones as far as taste and flavor. We probably need to do that again, Rob. Maybe to get you involved.
Yeah, I'll be a taste tester. Yeah, yeah. With me, if I'm going to eat corn off of the cob, I like for it to be, you know, filled out good. And we had a good friend from Hurdle Mills bring us some ambrosia corn that was really good. And we've got a little bit planted. Hopefully we'll have some ready, you know, within the next few weeks. But you know, it seems like the later in the season that you have sweet corn planted, that you do have a little bit more problems with earworms. And, you know, some people, you know, it doesn't bother them cutting the bad spot out of the corn. But, you know, as when you're growing it, you know, some people, you know, are organic, and if they see a worm, that kind of tells them that it hadn't been, you know, a lot of pesticide sprayed on the corn. But you are correct, you know, Gary, that it's a lot of people, if they see a worm in an ear of corn, you know, a lot of them are just, you know, discarded and won't use it. And
you
it's,
and I would.
That's right. You just cut the bad spot out of it and go. And you know, it's kind of back, you know, to the little saying, when eating an apple, would you rather find a whole worm or a half of a worm? But, you know, these people that feed our world, they do everything that they can to ensure that when we get that good and product, that it is the best that it can be. And unfortunately, sometimes we are kind of hard to please, so to speak, with different things like that. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, you bet. And, it, you know, and a lot of that's a consumer preference and a marketing issue that they are meeting. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what the market demands, that's what they're going to meet. So it's just different preferences on the product and what they want to see in that product, and that's entrepreneurial business and consumer buying. So that's the way that goes. Sweet corn is a good product. I think, you know, if you want to go out here and grow a patch, I think you can make money off of it. I think it could be, you know, Gary Bullen, who's the ag economist, and I have went back and forth. I believe I watched people growing up not make a total living out of it, but make a pretty good summer project money-wise out of it if they can find the right market. The right market is the issue. So, and you got to do multiple plantings. You can't just do one planting and have a truckload and then think you're going to sell all of it. No, no. You need to do multiple plantings hitting certain type times of the year and the holidays, especially the 4th holiday and Labor Day holiday. And if you can hit all those, Memorial Day, you maybe be able to hit, but that'd be tough because it's early. But those types of holidays, and you can sell a lot of corn because people like to have corn and watermelon and cantaloupe and garden stuff during that time of the year, green beans.
That's right. So it doesn't get any better. It sure doesn't.
Any better than that. So you bet. And, you know, we've talked a lot about corn today. Maybe we need to switch to soybeans.
All right. Let's take a break and let me get some information on from some of the supporters of the Gardener's Corner program. We'll be back with more with Gary Cross after these messages.
Owl Pride Foods, makers of Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip, is made in Roxboro. Pick up some the next time you're shopping at Hurdle Mills Market and Butcher Shop, North Main IGA, Supply Line Discounts in South Boston, Virginia, Food Lion, or Kenyon's Meat Market in Mebane. You can enjoy Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip at Rock City Grill, Cole's Pharmacy, Triss's Espresso, and Clarksville Station. Owl Pride Foods, makers of Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip, remind you that goodness grows in North Carolina. Try the jalapeno added for extra flavor. That's Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip.
It's July, and before you know it, August will roll around and we'll be start heading toward the fall season. We can already be thinking about cooler days of fall, and it'll be here before you know it when we really enjoy getting outdoors again and doing our fall lawn work in our fall flower gardens. It's also time to kill those weeds in the lawn to be ready for fall seeding. T.G. Brooks Company has the chemicals to do it, like Fertilome and high-yield lawn and garden products, brands that you can trust. T.G. Brooks Company is fully stocked for fall, and meanwhile, if you still need irrigation, they have plenty of irrigation needs, such as hose and sprinklers and piping. For your work in the yard, they have yard tools like rakes, hoes, diggers, choppers, pitchforks, pruning saws, loppers, wheelbarrows, and lawn carts, and lawn sweepers. And for your flower bed, they have your hardwood mulches and dyed mulches and that really good triple ground mulch and Daddy Pete's manure and soil by the bags. They have mulch in bags or by the trailer or pickup load, and they can arrange delivery if you need it. So this year, beautify with fresh pine needles, and for planting, get you some topsoil, planting soil, and they have cow manure. They also have the Pride dog food, including the Pride Pro Series, and yes, they still have dog kennels, too. No matter if you are a homeowner or business owner, they can fill your needs. If you are the professional landscaper, they can handle commercial accounts. It's no wonder people from every corner of Person County travel to T.G. Brooks Company. They love the friendly family business where every customer is important no matter how large or small, and they're treated with courtesy. They serve homeowners, farmers, and those in construction. They have since 1936. We're also thankful, and definitely it all comes together when you pay a visit to T.G. Brooks Company in Timberlake.
South Boston Memorials, located 1439 Seymour Drive in South Boston, Virginia, has been in business since 1958. The Myers family of South Boston Memorials believe that every life has a story. For four generations, their life work has been to present and preserve that story for our prosperity to hear. Allow South Boston Memorials to tell yours. South Boston Memorials has granite memorials, markers, and mausoleums over 300 in stock. In-house laser etching is available at South Boston Memorials, and they can also make pet markers. For memorial benches, vases, and monuments, Call on South Boston Memorials at 434-572-3859 or visit their website, sobomemorials.com. That's 434-572-3859. South Boston Memorials is located 1439 Seymour Drive in South Boston, Virginia. Like us on Facebook or visit the website, sobomemorials.com.
Gary Cross is our guest today on the Gardener's Corner program. Gary is the crops agent for Persimmon and Granville Counties of the Cooperative Extension Service. Want to pass along that Person Family Medical Center will be doing a free vaccination clinic at Twins Meat Market this afternoon between 2 and 4. Twins Meat Market is located at 8741 Durham Road. No appointment necessary. They just ask that you bring your insurance card and ID. Individuals will not be turned away if they don't have insurance. So if you'd like to get your COVID-19 vaccination, you can do it between 2 and 4 at Twins Meat Market. Person Family Medical Center will be offering first and second doses of the Pfizer vaccine for those 12 years and older, and the first and second dosage of the Moderna vaccine for those 18 years and older. For more information, call 336-599-9271. Gary, you said you wanted to talk a little bit about soybeans. From what I've seen, it looks like it looks like it's some pretty nice soybeans, but how do you think it's shaping up in this 2021 to be a good year for soybean production?
Well, the soybeans are looking a lot better than what they had the previous 2 months. They hadn't had a lot of moisture, and they were, you know, it was affecting the growth habit of the plant because you don't have moisture, you know, you can't, the plant can't grow in canopy well. So, I mean, it's doing a lot better than it was, but that's the reason why we have soybeans. You know, I've had questions from farmers and producers, you know, my soybeans look stunted. Well, that's probably the main reason why they're stunted, because of when they were planted, they had a hard time getting up because of the lack of moisture, and then there were spots in between that, you know, a couple of weeks here and there that didn't have any moisture, and it's really stunted the growth. And I think we're doing a little better than what we had since we got a lot of rain. Many of the fields are starting to flower. I mean, the beans that were planted after wheat are starting to come through and look a little better. So it's been a pretty tough soybean year in relation to getting the soybeans up and getting the soybeans to get the heights for good canopy that you can produce a lot of flowers and pods to be able to be filled with soybeans. But you know, they're looking a lot better than what they were, you know, 2-3 weeks ago.
Well, ma'am, Gary, any idea of as far as bushels per acre of soybeans does here in Person in Granville County on an average year?
It's a wide range between 30 and, you know, 60. According, you know, where you're at, when you got planted, how much rain, and if you have any disease, stink bug problems, insect issues, it's soil type. You know, it's a wide range. You know, if you had to put in there, probably 45 to 50 on an average, but maybe a little better than that in some spots. So it's just the way it's the way it's going. And you know this isn't central Illinois or Iowa, you know, where they have topsoil is 8 foot thick. So you know, where you can grow soybeans all day and all night. So you know, we don't have soils that thick, but we have varieties that work in the soils here very well, And there are some good yields. There have been some good yields come out of this these two counties in soybeans and in corn, both.
Well, now, it has always been, you know, like out in the Midwest, where they could produce a lot more bushels per acre than in this area. And I guess it comes down to, is it quality of soil, more or less, Gary?
Some of it is, yeah. And, you know, planting, making sure you choose a variety that will work on your farm maturity-wise. You know, how you prepared the ground, or if you no-tilled it, make sure you do adjustments to your planter or drill, especially if you're going to field, and creating a uniformity where, you know, majority of your beans are coming up pretty much at the same time to give you canopy when it comes up and gets to different stages, that it gets you the proper canopy and height that you need to be able to produce good flowers, blooms, and pods that can be filled.
Well, now, Gary, we've got maybe 2 minutes of air time left. Is it any parting remarks that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think, if you're a producer, you know, keep an eye on that target spot out there. If you're, and they've been spraying that, you know, if you're interested in any of the plot tours we're having, contact the Person or Granville County offices. The beef tour, which is not this Saturday, but the next Saturday, contact the Warren County office in Warrington. That looks like that's going to be a tremendous program. So give them a call so you can register. And, keep an eye out on the Granville and Person Extension websites for tours and demonstrations and updates.
Well, some good information. Well, Gary, appreciate you sharing some words of wisdom with us. And again, if you're interested in checking out some of the field plots, contact Gary. If you want to take a part in the tobacco tour, that will be next Wednesday there at the Tobacco Research Station there in Oxford. Just contact either the Granville or Person County offices to get signed up. And if you'd like to go out on the beef tour, what did you say? It's five counties or?
Yeah, but it's going to be held. The five counties is that it's held in different counties every year, five different counties.
Right.
And this year it's one of the five counties is Warren County.
Okay.
And Warren Vance. And they're hosting it in the county. You know, some years it's been Granville when Paul Westfall hosted it at Kim Woods. Other times it's been in Franklin County. Different counties for that. So this year it was Warren County's turn to host it. So they're doing it that next Saturday on, I believe, the 24th. So give them a call.
Gary, thank you. We appreciate our sponsors, T.G. Brooks Company, South Boston Memorials, and Iowa Pride Foods. We want to wish you and yours a happy and safe Friday afternoon and a good weekend, and thanks for tuning in.
96.7 WKRX.